We want to talk more about the process by which my ballot is submitted. So I've seen the candidates, I've made my choice, I've clicked on them, either only one or a number of them. Well, what happens then?
What's important is that you'll be prompted through the ballot to ensure that it does get properly filled out. So if you're not, you won't be able to choose too many candidates.
Right.
You will be warned if you're choosing too few.
Right.
That type of thing.
So all the things that were featured so prominently in the Florida elections of 2000 that caused so much aggravation to everyone involved.
They ought not to occur.
And in fact, the system is structured very intensely, so that really can't happen unless you're really even if you're really determined to violate the rules, you might be able to.
Well, I don't.
If you undervote, if you don't vote for everyone you're required to, or you can vote for just some of the candidates. You don't have to vote for everyone.
Depending on the rules of the particular election,
right.
You may very well be allowed to undervote.
Okay.
Yeah. In some cases, that will render the ballot ineligible. In some cases, that won't. But
right.
Where you are allowed to, so of course, the system will let you.
Right. If people are running for dog catcher and mayor, and you only want to vote for the dog catcher. And you don't have to vote for, or it could say you got to vote for everybody, or your ballot's no good.
Exactly.
However you want to do it.
Yeah.
And it could say pick 5 of 12, and you vote for 4, and presumably it would prompt you and say you've got one more vote. Essentially.
And it would ask you if you're sure.
If you're sure.
Assuming you're given the choice in that particular election.
Right.
Are you sure you only want to vote for 4?
Right. So essentially, the system works however the administrators of it want it to, and then give the choices to the voters to participate within the confines of those rules. Okay.
So the parameters are set, and the parameters are able to be enforced in every case.
Okay.
Because those
right.
are the prompts.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. When you're done with making your choices.
You'll be provided with a summary of your ballot and your choices.
Right.
And you'll be asked to confirm it or change it.
Right.
So there's no confusion as to whether or not you have properly voted in accordance with your wishes.
Right. So presumably you can change part of it, or you can wipe the whole thing clean and go back again.
Exactly.
Okay. So now you've made your choices, you've looked at your choices, you've see that they're the ones that you want to do. What do you do next?
You click submit,
right.
And you're all set, and you're provided with, depending on which type of voting setup you're using through us,
right.
Our most advanced setup provides you then with a receipt.
Okay, what kind of receipt is that exactly?
It's a computer-generated long random number consisting of numbers and letters,
right.
So it's virtually impossible to duplicate or hack.
Right.
And that is a receipt that is provided to each voter to allow the voters to go back into the system afterwards and key in that receipt number to ensure your vote has been counted.
And, okay. And now, but the vote is anonymous, isn't it?
Your vote should be anonymous to the administrators.
Right.
Right.
And so how do you resolve the issue that it's anonymous to the administrators, but you're able to check, are you able to check to see how your vote was tabulated or that your vote was tabulated?
The latter. You verify that your vote was included in the count rather than being told again who you voted for.
Okay. So the administrators of the system, and presumably no one else, knows how anyone votes.
Well, depending on the election, the administrators
right.
ought
they can't they have that,
to that
right.
as well. Right.
Right. But they do. They. It is known to them, and in fact, it's public knowledge who votes, isn't it? Or is it just known to the administrators and not public knowledge?
Well,
or that depends again on whether the administrators want to make that public.
Yes, there's going to be a policy. There's different tiers of anonymity depending on the organization and the type of vote.
Right.
Sometimes there's anonymity all the way through,
right.
as should be the case.
Right.
Sometimes with organizations, there's never been that type of anonymity because, for instance, in a paper ballot, they would always check that members voted by way of their membership number.
Right.
So there's a clear trace.
Okay. Now, what advantages does this system provide for people who are disabled in one way or another, visually or in terms of mobility? What kind of... add-ons are possible to let people vote who aren't sighted or mobile.
Mobility should be fairly apparent. Mm-hmm. If you are on the internet and not able to travel to an election center or a ballot center, you've got an advantage in that respect.
Right.
From certain other disabilities, visually impaired, we try to follow standards as to usability. In certain instances, we consult with outside experts as to accessibility to disabled persons to make sure the ballot is such that it can be accessed properly and viewed properly.
Are there essentially hooks in the system that can could essentially read it to people who can't see it?
I've never been involved with it to that extent.
Okay.
Where I've never been involved where we've had to take extra special measures with the ballot.
Okay. Now,
but the possibility is there, and it has been done before.
Okay. In recent years, the biggest issue in the United States in voting technology has been what's called voter-verified paper audit trails.
Yes.
How does the system relate to the issues raised by that consideration?
Well, we hope that we satisfy those concerns insofar as here or with our system, you are provided with a receipt. You are able to verify that your ballot has been counted. The other side of that is the way our software works is the software before the election may be audited and signed off by a third-party trusted source.
Right.
There is no ability in the system for the software to be changed subsequent to that. So if the software is tested, audited, the hood is locked, so to speak,
right,
on one hand, and on the other hand you can verify that your ballot was received, you put those two together, and I think you're in good shape knowing your vote was received and accurately counted.
Okay. What's the lead time or that it takes to set up one of these elections, would you say?
Depending on the complexity, I would think anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks.
Okay. What would make it take a couple of weeks?
Just the quantum of ballots and variables.
How fast are votes they're tabulated at computer speeds, aren't they?
Yes. In terms of the count at the end, we'll normally provide provisional results within 15 minutes of close of election.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about your company? Is it privately held, publicly traded?
Not publicly traded, privately held. Incorporated federally, I believe it was in 2001. We operate out of offices in Thornhill, which is in the north part of Toronto,
right,
Ontario. I'm the principal. I'm also a practicing lawyer.
Okay.
And essentially the staff with my company is as well the staff with this law firm.
Oh, okay. So it's, in a sense, a side business for the law business.
Well, I'm not sure which side is the side,
okay,
but there are two there.
Okay. Say a little bit more as we wrap up here about what the strategy might be, again, for building a base of satisfied users of your system who may eventually demand that it be used in federal, provincial, municipal elections in Canada and other countries.
The good news is I don't think it'll take any magic. People that tend to use the system or any type of online voting system will normally come back to it. It's the efficiencies that the internet offers that we're using in so many applications, and it just makes good sense. When people do it, they tend to say, why have we not been doing it now? So I look at it as gravity. This is the way the world is working or the way the world is going. If you are dealing with a vendor or a provider that has the appropriate checks and balances, there's really no reason you ought not to be using it, and certainly so in a private context.
Okay.
The caveat is the level of security. Most vendors are offering banking-level security that may be appropriate for certain instances. It may not be. Ours is increased beyond banking-level security.
Okay. You can trust it more than you can trust the business you do electronically with a bank, it would seem pretty secure.
Agreed. The other side of it is, and it's an odd, voting has never been entirely secure.
Right.
That's the good news and the bad news. Right now we're relying on human procedures to ensure security. As we've seen in various instances, that's not perfect. So we're not going from a perfect system to a less than perfect system. There's no such thing as perfection in these types of large-scale endeavors.
Would you say, in fact, that when your system is working, it's at least as secure as most existing legacy voting systems?
I think without a doubt.
And, in fact, it could be used. We've sort of been talking about the Internet as a cloud here. It can be for people using desktops, laptops, or mobile systems as well, can it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So hopefully they'll use their internet connection to listen to this interview, and eventually they'll use it in private practice, and then someday perhaps in public practice.
I certainly think so.
Okay. Thanks for talking to us about your company, your product, and remote internet voting.
I thank you for the opportunity, Mark.
You're very welcome.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.